Well, for those of us who made the unimaginable effort to come to class on a Friday like this, let us continue with alpha chemistry. Now, I think last time we started with the Claisen condensation, didn't we? We started getting into that topic, did we not? So, knowing that you all have faithfully read chapter 19, I know we're perfectly ready for a discussion about the Claisen condensation. So, Claisen condensation. Is a form of alpha reaction, which means we are going to form an enolate. So what would be an appropriate base to make an enolate out of this compound, Anthony? What would be an appropriate base to make an enolate out of this compound? Okay. Would it, though? Because what would be the potential side reaction if you used OH? What would be the potential side reaction, Kevin, if you were to use sodium hydroxide? Okay. My Spanish is not good enough, so I'll say it again in English. If you used hydroxide, what would be the potential side reaction?
Lila.
Locke. Steven. Yes. Saponification. You can't use hydroxide to deprotonate this because, not Tiffany, the new people I don't know yet. What is your name? I'm sorry. Taylor. I know it was a T. What's the approximate pKa of the alpha proton of this compound? Guesstimate, roughly. Under 20 or over 20? Over 20, about 24. Why? Because we have the oxygen on that methoxy group that's donating electron density actively through resonance into the carbonyl, which makes the carbonyl unable as well to tolerate a negative charge at the alpha position. So, and what's the approximate pKa of water if we round it? 16. So 16 versus 24 is 8 orders of magnitude, which means if you were trying to use hydroxide, you'd get less than a percent of it that would dissociate. So hydroxide cannot be used to irreversibly make an enolate. But we saw on Wednesday a compound that could be used. Shivani, what was it? Are you Shivani? LDA, that's right, which is lithium disopropylamide. Which is got a pKa, its conjugate. Someone looked it up yesterday, and it was 35 or 34, depending on your textbook. Not the 40 I had quoted. But still, it's an amine which does not want to be an acid that we force to deprotonate, which means it's a really, really strong base. So yes, we can use LDA in order to make the enolate, which I've gone ahead and written it in its non-tomerized form, but that's fine because this is the way that it reacts. Now, a question came up in the other section, which is, why is it that we end up with alkylation at the C position instead of the O position? You know, if this is a delocalized ion and we're used to oxygen being a nucleophile, why is it that oxygen can't react and somehow attach to something else? The answer is it can under certain circumstances. Now, I tried reading half the books that I had in my office yesterday because someone had come by and asked, and I couldn't find the specific answer. They kind of danced around it and mentioned it but didn't explain it well. So I've got to find some better resource to get that firm answer. One of the explanations I did find had something to do with hard-soft interaction, exactly the same thing we talked about in lab on Wednesday as far as why do Michael additions occur, why do conjugate additions occur. And the statement was made that an alkyl halide is somehow a soft form of substrate. And that for some reason, therefore, it's better for the carbon to attach. It didn't go any further than that, so I don't really understand it myself why that's such a revealing explanation. Another explanation could be that the carbonyl bond is thermodynamically more favorable than the carbon-carbon bond. So it could be partially due to thermodynamics. So I'm just acknowledging there is the situation where, yes, something could happen with the oxygen instead. I did try to find an answer, and these were not instructional textbooks. These were reference books I couldn't find the answer in. So give me a few days to try to find a better answer, but we won't worry then about it for the moment. What's going to happen, though, if there's no other compound around in solution? Because I did say the word alkylation a moment ago, but I did title this as clays and condensation. That's what really I should be talking about at the moment. So if there was no other compound in solution, what would happen? As the first couple of molecules react with LDA, and you start to form the enolate, but you have some of the ester left over as well, because it's not instantaneous, what potential reaction could happen? You're going to attack a carbonyl compound, which, if this is the only reagent, then the ester itself is the carbonyl compound that gets attacked. So it's kind of like the first version of the aldol condensation that we saw, which I know I said on Wednesday we come back to the aldol condensation, and I'm going to put it right up right after this to compare what kind of products we get out of it. Because remember, the tough part of this is going to be synthesis, recognizing which of the many alpha reactions is going on. And so I just want to revisit that topic to give you an idea what to study over the weekend. So we have another molecule of the ester, which that alpha position will attack the carbonyl reversibly. Why? Because remember that we're guesstimating that the conjugate of an alkoxide will have some pKa around 16 to 18-ish, even with something else nearby, possibly having some kind of inductive effect. And we're coming from a compound that had a pKa of 24. So there is some difference in pKa, but technically that part of it could be reversible. But then there's something else that happens, which, let's see. We have the carbonyl that survives, because remember in many of these additions, we have one carbonyl that goes away, one that survives. And I've taken the molecule on the left here and flipped it around to the position on the right just so that I can have my ester group on the right, which is by default the way I tend to do it. So if we look what else it would be attached to then, it's going to have attacked that carbonyl position of the other ester, making the alkoxide. We also have the methoxide that was at that same carbon as well. And then we have the methyl group that was a part of that original ester. At this point, we can have the alkoxide try to reform a carbonyl, and that's perfectly possible because the methoxide is not going to be any worse of a base than the alkoxide is, and so it is okay for it to be a leaving group. And technically, that portion of the reaction is reversible. Again, because of the similarities. But these compounds are isolatable. But now notice what the structure is that's resulted. At the beta position, we have a carbonyl. And there is a new bond between the alpha and beta positions. So in a Claisen condensation, the product is a beta keto ester with a new carbon-carbon bond at the alpha and beta positions. For reference sake, let's now review quickly the aldol condensation. Aldol condensation, we don't have the problem of saponification. If we were to use hydroxide on this, the worst that we would do is to start to make a hydrate, which we wouldn't be able to isolate anyways. So hydroxide's a perfectly fine base to use. Although, it still won't reversibly form an enolate, but we did get away with using it in the lab. So, I'll go ahead and show hydroxide. And I guess I'll have to write a reversible arrow then, technically. So we have an enolate. Again, if it's the only compound in solution, then as that enolate starts to form, the compound reacts with another molecule of itself. And very similar mechanism. Notice that up above, I already left the negative charge on the carbon. Down below, I've got a resonance step because I put the charge on the oxygen. But otherwise, it's the same step, a bond forming through that alpha position by opening up a carbonyl. Again, because these intermediates are of similar basicity, there is reversibility to that step. Again, I'm taking the portion that I had on the left and now moving it over to the right. Again, that's just my thing that I tend to put the ester or the recovered carbonyl to the right. And then we do have the new alkoxide that was formed by the attack. And then we have the alkyl group that was at that position. Now notice the big difference between the Claisen condensation and the aldol condensation. In the Claisen condensation, we have what, and I'm putting it in quotes, what we could call a leaving group. And the only reason I'm putting it in quotes is, of course, if we were talking about SN1, SN2, it would never be a leaving group. But in this case, because this is a base reaction, a base promoted reaction, it turns out to be a leaving group. But now down below here, we have a methyl group or a hydrogen that I did not write in. And so there's no leaving group, which is why we don't end up with two carbonyls. The top Claisen condensation, we have two carbonyls that result because both carbonyls reform. Down below, we don't have a way to let that alkoxide reform a carbonyl. So you only end up with one carbonyl in the product. That's again a difference to how to recognize which one of those reactions is going on. If we continue this mechanism, remember there's no H plus yet, so if I want to have that alkoxide be protonated, then I have to have it attack water, which since I used hydroxide as a base, that would be appropriate. And then remember, many times in these condensations, there's a follow-up step, an elimination. And remember, I had already commented that that is a two-step process. First, the alpha proton is removed. And then you have elimination. This may be different in the way it looks for what I had done previously, because I'm now incorporating resonance into my mechanism. But as I said a zillion times the last couple of days, resonance is not a step, so you may combine it anywhere, and it would be, as asked on Wednesday, considered correct. So, just because I wrote it up above and we're supposed to be reviewing, the aldol condensation is one in which the product is either a beta hydroxy aldehyde or ketone, or an alpha-beta
unsaturated aldehyde or a ketone.
Now, we had gone over alpha alkylation Wednesday. So whether we're using aldehydes or ketones like we would in an aldol condensation, or whether we're using esters as we could in a Claisen condensation, what do you think we'd have to do in real life to ensure that if we wanted to do alkylation, we can make the enolate without having the compound instantly react with itself? Just think of it this way.
Switching topics slightly. If we were doing alkylation, synthetically, we could write it out like this. For an ester, for example, we could say LDA, make the enolate, throw an alkyl group at it, some kind of leaving group, which I'll call it RX, but let's remind ourselves that that's a primary. And we'll end up with an ester with an R group on it. But the start of this reaction, using LDA, is exactly the same as the Claisen condensation. So if we weren't careful how we did the reaction in real life, we would have a problem selecting between which one of these products we would be able to form. So how could we in real life get the alkylation to work, avoid the Claisen condensation? It's a matter of which way you add the reagents. Because if you have a pot full of ester and you add LDA to it, then only a little enolate forms at one time, but there's a lot of ester around, which gives the enolate a chance to react with the ester. But if you have a pot of LDA and you add the ester slowly to it, as long as you have a little excess LDA, that acid-base reaction is likely to be faster than the condensation. And so you drip it in a little bit at a time and you keep on forming the enolate, but there's never any ester around in order to react. I'm not writing this down because I don't tend to quiz lab techniques in lecture, but it was actually something mentioned in your text. And in, for those of you who are going to be chemists or go on to have more chemistry courses, you do need to know something then about order of addition. At least we need to have discussed it once. So there it is. If you add the ester to LDA, you avoid building up ester, and so you don't get the condensation. If you add LDA to the ester, you're going to get the condensation. Does that make sense? So I'll just write down a brief note here. Why not at least write it down? That a Claisen condensation can be avoided by adding the ester to an excess of LDA. That way, no significant quantity of the ester builds up for the enolate to react with.
This also means that we could do mixed condensations.
For example, if we had an ester react it in the appropriate way with LDA to be able to form the enolate, what would happen if we then threw an aldehyde at it?
Then this is going to be like an aldol condensation, because the aldehyde that's going to get attacked, that carbonyl will go away. we're only going to end up with one carbonyl in the product. So that part's like an aldol. But we end up with an ester. So this would be the sneakiest of the condensations to recognize. You'd have to know it was the ester that turned into an enolate first. We could, maybe on Monday, see an example of doing the reverse, forming the enolate specifically from the aldehyde and then have it attack an ester. Let me just show you this for now. I won't write the mechanism for this because maybe that would be good practice, along with the Stork enamines mechanism that I'm sure any of you are ready to discuss for us today, right? Would somebody kick the door closed back there? Just because I think it's going to get louder and louder out there. So the product, what's it going to be? The ester reforms. And if you had heat involved, you're going to get dehydration. And you're going to end up with an alpha-beta unsaturated product. But because we started with an ester, we end with an ester as the functional group. Any questions on anything that I've covered so far this morning? All right, so these are the simple additions. And we touched on alkylation again. And we've reviewed twice now alpha halogenation. You had your introduction on Monday, I think it was, and then we recovered it again on Wednesday. So I'm not going to cover it again today. But are there any questions about any of those topics that I just named? Alpha halogenation, alkylation, aldol condensation, Claisen condensation, or even going back to alpha acidity before I get to our next big chunk of material. Yes, sir?
At the end of the last lecture, you said NaOH cannot be used to alpha decarbonate?
Not in certain situations. So if it was the Claisen condensation I was talking about, you can't use hydroxide for exactly the same reasons we talked about the first thing this morning, which is you'd get saponification instead. But as I just showed you, if it was an aldol condensation where you didn't have the problem of saponification, then as long as you're doing a pure aldol condensation, you could use hydroxide. And in fact, I don't think your textbook goes into this, and I'm hesitant to mention it only because of the, I don't want to get us too far off track, but these aldol condensations, since they involve similar bases, you can make an aldol go in reverse. Because there isn't a huge thermodynamic difference between the reactants and products. And in fact, some cases you have to force the products to form. And so there's this complicated thing called a Soxhlet extractor, which you have a solid base, which only reacts at a particular point in the cycle then with the reagents. And since we don't have pictures to look at, there's a way that it isolates the products from the reaction material. So it kind of pulls a Le Chatelier's trick in order to force the products to form. I don't even remember how properly to spell the word Soxhlet because I never used one, but it starts with S-O-X. So if any of you want to look that up over the weekend, might be some additional information for those of you are interested. But since I don't remember seeing it in the textbook, I'm just not going to touch on it in lecture then. Yes? Up here. Can I go back what?
The second
mechanism. Yes?
How did that OH leave?
This is the E1CB elimination mechanism. So it's E1 in the sense that it's unimolecular. This involves this molecule at the point of elimination. But the CB designation is used for this special case where by deprotonating in an alpha position, you then get a beta elimination of a hydroxide. So hydroxide's a leaving group only in this case because you have an enolate that can form and then eliminate within the same molecule. So again, if you wanted to look that up as an individual topic, E1CB. Emerson.
Do we always end with the same molecule as we started?
I think so. I might be able to come up with a case where you don't, but I think you do. All right, well, let's move on now. Let's see. We really need to get to the Michael edition, but I want to get to something else that's a classic topic. Since we're kind of in the land of alkylations and condensations, I want to get to the malonic ester synthesis. Oh, but there is one small thing we can do before that. Because there's this thing that's called the Diekmann condensation, which is just an intramolecular Claisen. So here we have a diester that I could react with LDA. And let's say that only one side or the other forms the enolate. And I guess I'll go ahead and write this out as a mechanism. So I'll pull off the alpha proton. LDA, just to remind us of what the structure looks like. Nitrogen with two isopropyl groups, lithium counter ion, two lone pairs. There we go. May the enolate, which intramolecular reactions, if they form rings of the right kind of size, are often faster than intermolecular reactions, because you only have one molecule you're having to worry about coordinating instead of two. So if we were to have a reaction through the alpha position of this enolate, counting that position, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If we were to attack this carbonyl, we would make a five-membered ring, which 5 and 6-membered rings are favorable. Not just thermodynamically, but kinetically. Because imagine this, even though a 20-membered ring may have no steric strain or no ring strain or any of that, if you have 20 atoms separated from each other, what's the likelihood that those two ends are ever going to meet each other to make a ring in solution? So thermodynamics is not the only issue, but kinetics are involved as well. So, but 5 and 6-membered rings are both kinetically and thermodynamically favorable to form. And so, in this case, it will. Enolate collapses, intramolecular attack on the other carbonyl. Oh, and I got to think about this, because if an alkoxide has got a pKa of a conjugate of 16 to 18, but an ester has a pKa of 24, this step really maybe not so reversible, because there is a difference in pKa's that results. Worrying about that little detail later, let's deal with the larger issue of counting carbons. And I'm going to label the number 1 from the carbonyl position of the of one ester. So we've got 6 carbons, but recognize that what I've labeled as carbon 1 will not be in the ring, because that carbonyl isn't in the ring. It's the alpha position next to it that forms the ring. So if I circle that portion of the molecule, once the reaction's over with, it's going to reform its carbonyl. So, we have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 5 members in the ring. So let me just draw a 5-membered ring. And let's label some carbons now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. At the 6th position, that's where we'd have the methoxide still and the alkoxide. This is exactly the same as the Claisen condensation. It's just that we've also now made a ring. And you know I love problems with rings, so you know you're going to see this. So this collapses back down and kicks off methoxide. And we still end up with a beta keto ester. So again, nothing more than intermolecular clazon. So any questions about that reaction? Then now let's get to this thing called the malonic ester synthesis. So, diethyl malonate. Is this molecule? Oh, no, it's not. Those are ethyl group, methyl groups. Diethyl malonate. There we go. What is the pKa of that proton? Oh, now you should have a unified response because you all have been dutifully memorizing your alpha hydrogen pKa values for the exam that's a week from today. For the exam that's a week from today. What is the pKa of that alpha proton? I heard two different answers, but yes, it is 13. Which means if we slowly and carefully introduced a solution of sodium hydroxide, it wouldn't saponify because the acid-base reaction is easier now. We would be taking a stronger base, making a weaker base. That's a favorable reaction. Notice that means we could use something wimpy, by comparison, like hydroxide, to make an enolate. We avoid having to use LDA or some extreme form of base in order to, as I'm about to show you, do an alkylation reaction. So, hydroxide can be used this time. And even though it's not a huge pKa difference, just for simplicity's sake, I'll show a forward arrow. Let me make a comment about the hydroxide. Sodium hydroxide is an appropriate base in this case. Since the diester is more acidic than water. So saponification is unlikely. Yes. Oh, did I put... Well, yes. Sorry. You are right. I have sodium, lithium on the brain. There we go. Now, I just said we could do an alkylation. Let's do an alkylation. So I keep saying alkyl halide, but realize we could have a sulfonate as well. A tosylate, mesylate, something like that. What's the other word I saw the other day? Bisonate, I think. Bromo. So, sorry. Wow. Man. Don't stand in the way of her chemistry. There we go. So we have the alkylation reaction. We put an R group on there. What would we get if we saponified? Which, this is my homework over the weekend. I somehow remember there being some steric or other reason why once you put one R group on here, you need a little stronger base to pull the second one off. I need to go back and verify if that's true. Even if that's true, if all you have is in solution is hydroxide, then over time you're going to saponify. So you'll get the dye salt. Oh, gosh. Habit. Now, what would happen if we then acidified with a bit of moderate heating? Ooh. Oh, you mean put an OH group on there? Yes, of course. But what'll happen then? This is an answer that requires having read chapter 19. So again, knowing that you all are keeping up with the chapter, who would like to answer that question? Ooh, you're learning. You're all looking at me or looking at the board because you know it's the people that look away that get called on. Well, let me write something up here. Yeah, you know, if you're in the jungle, you learn how to deal with the lions. You might think, well, why did he write one OH group in one place and the other in the other? Let me tell you a side story. Momentarily. You're like, no, cliffhangers, no. Diketone, right? What happens when you take an NMR of this compound? What do you see? You see absorbances at 2.3 for being an alpha position on the outside there, the methyl group. I forget what the chemical shift for where the dicarbonyl alpha hydrogen would be, but let's say that it's 3 or something like that. You also see an alkene peak, and you see an alcohol peak. Why? Because if you tautomerize, then you end up with intramolecular hydrogen bonding. Which helps stabilize the otherwise unfavorable enol. I forget what the percentage is of it in solution that forms, but it's not trivial. Because there's enough of it that you see it in NMR. This is mentioned somewhere in your text too. I forget which of the chapters, but I see people shaking their head. You remember reading it. Yes. So there's a significant intramolecular interaction that occurs. Again, enough so that you see it in NMR. Coming back to this case now, what if the intramolecular interaction was so strong that you then have a pericyclic reaction? No, we're not going to start talking about frontier orbital theory and ground states and excited states again, but what if the carbonyl were to open up and get that proton, which causes the OH bond to come down to the other carbonyl, which could open, close, kick out this other carbon bond, which would then come back to satisfy this other carbonyl. One of these days, I'm going to just be in a mood and I'm going to draw some mechanism that's fake, but that ends up looking like this, just to... I got to do that one of these days. It'll be the next Facebook sensation, right? Anyways. So look at that. Realize it's just everything rotating around in a circle. Well, what would you get out of this? And this is most definitely irreversible once you see what happens. Because let's take this group over here. So there's this side of the molecule. And then what we have over here, carbon dioxide. Beta diacids are prone to decarboxylation. This is why malonate is used, because you can alkylate it under mild conditions. And then as long as your compound is moderately acid tolerant, you can then decarboxylate and end up with, well, something that doesn't quite look useful yet. But you can't isolate this product. Why? It's an enol. It's an enediol, in fact. So it tautomerizes. Alkene gets protonated. One or the other of the OH groups can undergo resonance, which means we reform a carbonyl that's initially protonated, which means it's going to deprotonate, and you end up with a carboxylic acid with your own choice of R group at the alpha position. And that's the usefulness of this malonic ester synthesis. Malonic ester synthesis. Is used to prepare custom carboxylic acids. You know, the ones where you get the neon undercarriage and the paint job done on them. So, prepare custom carboxylic acids under comparatively mild conditions. There's its close cousin, the acetoacetate synthesis, where it's the same process. Let me show it to you. Acetoacetate. Someone that's got one of those fancy electronic devices that can rove the internet, could you look up the pKa of hydrogen carbonate? Not carbonic acid, but hydrogen carbonate. And it's pKa, not it's pKb, because hydrogen carbonate, remember, is amphoteric. So, what's the pKa of this proton? 11. Which means that hydroxide can even more easily deprotonate this compound. No, I was going to write the enol version, but then which carbonyl would be more likely to be involved in making the enolate? The one on the left or the one on the right? Which carbonyl would be more likely to actually be involved in making the enolate? The one on the left or the one on the right? Well, which one is the more active carbonyl? If you were to reduce this with sodium borohydride, which of the two carbonyls would be reduced? The one on the left, because the one on the right is still an ester. Yes, you've got two carbonyls, which does make that alpha proton more acidic, but it's the left-hand carbonyl that's probably doing more of the heavy lifting, because you still have the oxygen on the right-hand carbonyl that's getting involved. Just a side issue. I can avoid that issue by just putting a negative charge on the carbon instead. Now I react this with an alkyl halide. I get my alkylated group. Yes, I realize I'm using the methyl ester. Oh well, it does the same thing. We then can saponify, or if there's no acid-sensitive groups on the molecule, just simply hydrolyze to begin with. Water, heat, and acid. You'll go through an intermediate, which looks like this. So there's only one ester this time. So it will be, so you only have one carboxylic acid. So that will be the side that decarboxylates. So after decarboxylation, we'll get an enol. But because this other half was a ketone, it's only a monoenol. So once it tautomerizes, we end up with a ketone with an R group at the alpha position. So again, it's a way of alkylating under somewhat less harsh conditions than we might otherwise use. Yes, Leonardi? Because you can't isolate those. That's a perfect stopping point. So do we have any questions? Then enjoy this beautiful weather that we're having.